This is what C.S. Lewis dealt with in World War II. In 1939, the leadership of many of the educational institutions over in England were debating, they were discussing whether to continue classes. After all, what good is it to continue studying subjects like math and science and English and all this type of stuff when the whole world is burning? As they considered continuing studies, Lewis said this, quote, "And at first sight, this seems to be an odd thing to do during a great war. What is the use of beginning a task which we have so little chance of finishing? Or even if we ourselves should happen not to be interrupted by death or military service, why should we, indeed how can we, continue to take an interest in these placid occupations? When the lives of our friends and the liberties of Europe are in the balance, is this not like fiddling while Rome burns?" The title of my message tonight is this: Are We Fiddling While Rome Burns? A variation of this problem came up recently with our own family. So I and the kids were talking, and I was having a conversation with one of our four kids, and they mentioned to me, it's hard to concentrate on some things while so much is going on around us. This could be the persecution of Christians. This is the violence and murder of innocent people, including children. So much going on in our world, both far away and here at home. It's so hard to concentrate. It's so hard to think, how can I be doing these little things like doing homework, mowing the lawn, going out to eat, all these mundane tasks. Another way of looking at it, I was confronted first with this problem when I was a kid through my favorite superhero. I'm a Superman fan. Any Superman fans out there? All right, a few. I love Superman. I always have. In the 1978 movie directed by Richard Donner, Superman's father, Jor-El, tells him part of the reason he is supposed to maintain a secret identity is to protect himself from being called upon endlessly to solve problems and to deal with crises. As a kid, I used to wonder, how is Superman going to decide what emergency to go help people at, right? I mean, that's a critical question as a kid. How could he ever sleep at night knowing someone was dying? I was 5 years old, 6 years old, wondering these things. Now, these may sound like different illustrations, and they are, but they actually are all reflecting the same root question. And that root question is, do we keep going on with life when there are serious things going on? Does it feel right to just go about our lives, pay our bills, feed our fish, watch or play our sports, take our classes, eat ice cream, you know, go to sheets? If we do those things, are we fiddling while Rome is burning? This is a topical message tonight, and a few of the passages may be up on the screen this evening. I will turn to some. Some I'll be quoting, because it is a topical message tonight. But I want to give you six statements, and then we're going to put handles on those statements. I call that putting handles on truth, so we can take it home with us. All right? Six statements to consider. Are we fiddling while Rome is burning? There's no debate that Rome is burning. There's no debate that in our world things are burning. There's no debate that what's going on in our own country is tearing the country apart on so many levels. The question is, to keep doing what we're doing, are we fiddling around? Are we wasting time? Number one, I want you to hear this, and this does come from C.S. Lewis himself, that's this observation. Realize nothing has changed for the entirety of time. In other words, we are always a step away from death. We are always a step away from war. We are always just a step away from tragedy. I don't want you to be discouraged. I don't want you to be despairing tonight. Hopefully you won't be by the end of the message. But we need to realize something. Jesus himself said, we can't add a heartbeat just by thinking about it, right? We don't know how long we have on this earth. We are always within a hair's breadth of eternity. What happens is, when wartime, in C.S. Lewis's case, or turbulent times such as we're seeing now, that timetable is accelerated. It becomes more obvious to us because our comfort is disrupted. But it's always been this way. Here's a direct quote. Human life has always been lived on the edge of a precipice. Human culture has always had to exist. When he talks about culture, remember, he was talking to educational institutions, right? Students. Do we keep studying? Is it a waste of time to keep studying? So when he says culture, that's who he's talking about. Human culture has always had to exist under the shadow of something infinitely more important than itself. If men had postponed the search for knowledge and beauty until they were secure, the search would never have begun. We are mistaken, here it is, when we compare war with normal life. Life has never been normal. Even those periods which we think most tranquil turn out on closer inspection to be full of crises, alarms, and difficulties. Did people pass away before COVID? Yes. Were there car accidents before COVID? Yes. Was there turmoil in our country before the last election? Certainly. We could go down the list and I could point out to you time and time again, was there things going on behind closed doors? Yeah, and that was the key. It was behind closed doors. Now the doors in many cases have been ripped off. Now we're seeing it, but that doesn't mean it hasn't always been there. It's always been there. Because as long as sin has been around, evil and wickedness and tragedy and turmoil and problems and eternity has been right there. So that's the first observation I want you to see, is that nothing has really changed. We just are having our eyes opened to it. Number two, the call from God to engage in the spiritual battle assumes a call to prepare. Now, sometimes we think of this in context of a man who gets, a young man in particular, gets called to preach. And a call to preach is a call to prepare. In other words, if God calls you to preach, he's also calling you to a certain amount of time preparing so that when you get out into the field or the pastor or whatever it is, you're ready for it. But it also applies to every part of the Christian's life. 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 32, it's talking about the people who were on David's side when he was crowned king. And of the children of Issachar, listen to how they're described, which were men that had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. These men were specifically described as having great wisdom and knowledge. Jewish historians tell us that these guys were well-learned, well-learned in astronomy, in mathematics, philosophy. That takes time to learn. But oh, what an asset they would be to the new King David. The call to engage. In other words, you feel this. Oh, I want to do something about this. Okay. That feeling, that call to engage our culture and to engage those around us and do something about what's going on in the world is also a call to prepare to do something. You know, an untrained soldier can do a whole lot more harm than good. Right? If he's sent to the heat of the battle too soon. The training camps are vital. As experienced soldiers fight the current battle, the new soldiers are trained and learn new skills for the battles of tomorrow. I hear about this every NFL season. I'm not a huge NFL fan, especially since things started getting all political, you know. But as I drive many, many miles, sometimes I listen to sermons, right? Sometimes I listen to sports radio because it just keeps me awake. So as I'm driving down the road, listen to sports radio, this happens every single year. They talk about rookie quarterbacks that are drafted onto teams that need them right away. And they have to weigh, is it worth putting this rookie quarterback who's never played in the NFL as a starter or not? Is it worth it to do that? And why are they asking that question? Because NFL is a whole different level than college. And if they put in a guy who can't handle the pressure, can't adapt, they risk ruining that quarterback for the rest of his career because he's green, right? It's the same principle here. If you really want to be most effective for the cause of Christ, don't shy away from the time that it takes to prepare for where God has you to be. Now, I know we've got a wide variety of ages in here. We've got, I mean, literally, we've got a new, how many weeks old? 2.5 week old in here. She's paying very good attention, by the way. Doing a fantastic job. All right. We've got the whole age gamut in here, right? My daughter is 18. She's finishing up senior year. My son Brandon's in here back there. He's a ninth grader. We've got folks at all different various stages of life. You might think, well, this applies a lot to the student age, and it does. But really, God prepares all of us at the rate he wants us to be ready for the battle. Dedicate yourself to preparation so you can actually be a help and not a liability when you're able to join the battle. 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 8 says this, "For if the trumpet give an uncertain sound, who shall prepare himself to the battle?" Now, in context, he's talking about speaking in tongues, etc. But I can't help as a musician thinking to myself, man, when the guy who's leading the charge is on the spot, you want him to be ready to play that trumpet. I've only heard, once in my life have I ever heard a man playing taps, anyone playing taps at an official event, miss a note. And I felt really bad for him. It's easy. I'm a brass player. You can miss notes easily. I mean, it could be cold outside. It could be raining. It could be whatever. The guy before you might have talked a really long time, so your instrument's not warmed up, whatever. I tell you, those guys train so that when it's time to step up and play those solemn notes, they don't mess up. What did the Bible say about David? That he was a musician, right? But he was what? Cunning in playing, the Bible says. That took years. But then one day, God says, all right, now it's time. Now it's time. The call to engage assumes a call to prepare. Sometimes we feel that the tasks that seem so mundane, they're so menial, they're so small, they might end up being the very things that God uses. Number one, realize nothing has changed for the entirety of time since sin. Number two, the call to engage assumes a call to prepare. Number three, we must work within the plan that God is working. We must work within the plan that God is working. See, God's not caught by surprise, amen? God's not in the dark. God's not off his throne. God isn't sitting there wringing his hands wondering what's going on in Afghanistan. God was not surprised by any shenanigans that went on in the last election. God's not surprised by any of that. He knows what's going on. I don't understand what's going on because I don't understand God. And guess what? I'm glad I can't understand God sometimes because I don't want a God that's the same size as me. I want a big God. I know you've heard this illustration before, but the idea that God is working everything together and like a quilt, and if you look at the underside of a quilt, it looks like a royal mess. But when you flip it over to the other side and you see, oh, that's why that thread is there. Oh, that's what that splotch of color was on the other side. It looks so beautiful. It's because God's working a plan. You know, it takes discernment to know when to do one's best to avoid trouble and confrontation, and when it's God's timing to face trouble head on. For instance, take Jesus. This is, I think we have this one, John 7. You have John 7 back there, beginning of verse number 1. Look at that. Boom. I love it. After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Jewry because the Jews sought to kill him. This is Jesus we're talking about. Now, the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand. His brethren, therefore, said unto him, Depart hence and go into Judea, that thy disciples also may see the works that thou doest. For there is no man that doeth anything in secret, and he himself seeketh to be known openly. If thou do these things, show thyself to the world. This is his brothers. What does the Bible say? For neither did his brethren believe in him. This is James. This is Jude. They didn't yet believe that he was the Messiah. Isn't that amazing? They grew up with him. They never saw him sin. That's a whole nother message, right? Verse 6. Look at what Jesus says. Then Jesus said unto them, my time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but me it hateth, because I testify of it that the works thereof are evil. Jesus is fully conscious of all the evil going on in the world. Well then, Jesus, why don't you step up to the plate then? Why don't you challenge it head on? Jesus, you're 100% man, but you're 100% God at the same time. Why don't you step up? What does he say? Go ye up unto the feast, he says, tells his brothers. I go not up yet unto the feast, for my time is not full come. When he had said these words unto them, he abode still in Galilee. So he waited. Verse 10, isn't this interesting? But when his brethren were gone up, then went he also up unto the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret. Isn't this interesting? Doesn't this make you a little curious? I mean, Jesus never lies. He said, I'm not going, you guys go. Well, he wasn't going at that moment, right? What's he doing? What am I trying to illustrate here? Jesus was waiting for his Father's timing before he would publicly and, if I can use the term, officially do battle with the forces of evil. He's being smart about this. You realize sometimes, well, let's put it this way. Sometimes we have to be careful that we don't call people cowards when we don't know the whole story. Across our country, as I've been dealing with different churches, I say dealing, that means like a bad thing. No, as I've had the opportunity to minister to different churches are in different parts of the country and they deal with different things. And one thing that's kind of bothered me is to hear churches criticize each other. Well, if I were the pastor of that church, I would have done things this way. Well, if I were in that church, I wouldn't have gone there, or I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have yielded to this. I wouldn't have gone that. I wouldn't have closed that. I wouldn't open that. And it goes back and forth and back and forth. Listen, the truth of the matter is that no two churches are identical. No two local governments are identical. And we've got to navigate these waters wisely and with discernment. Look, if Jesus himself was weighing these things, and then he decided to go up in secret. Listen, if Jesus himself didn't just barge in, it's not a lack of courage. It's because we've got to work within the plan God is working. It wasn't that he wasn't brave or not bold. Sometimes we have to bide our time and trust God. It's difficult, but sometimes we have to do that. Number four. God does not tell us to stop doing life. God does not tell us to stop doing life. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. I think we've got that one too, right? You probably know this one, some of you by heart. What does it say? Let's read it together. For whether therefore ye eat or drink, or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. Okay, whether ye eat or drink. What is that? That's sitting down having a meal. Right? Isn't that the picture of quote-unquote everyday mundane life? Someone's got to make the meal. Someone's got to go earn the money to purchase the ingredients for the meal, right? Here's another one, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. You realize it's a good thing to have a job? Well, I need to quit my job and go win the lost. Okay. I understand your heart. But 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8 says, but if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. See, we're not mono-thinking people. We're not just one-issue-thinking people. We want to, God doesn't tell us to stop doing life. In fact, he assumes the opposite. Number five, proper stewardship of ourselves is a good thing. Proper stewardship of ourselves is a good thing. What is stewardship? Well, stewardship is a responsibility, right? I have stewardship of a vehicle. It's really not mine. It belongs to the bank. Right? I call it mine, and hopefully one day we'll pay it off. Seems like forever. But hopefully one day we'll pay it off, and then it'll be mine. But right now, it's a stewardship. I'm grateful for it. It allows us to do what we do, but that's a stewardship. You know, what if I preached 3 times a day, each day, every week, all year? Well, maybe I could preach to more people. Maybe more people would hear the gospel. Not really. Not at first. At first it might seem that way, but what would happen? Well, I can tell you right now, I had a vocal injury. You guys know about that. If I were to preach that way, God didn't build me that way. He didn't build me like he blessed Brother Tom Farrell, who's now with the Lord, right? I don't have a leather-lunged voice. That's not how God made me. I've got to steward my voice. Well, does that mean I'm not doing my part in allowing souls to go to hell, or I'm not bold? No. It has to do with stewardship. Now, if God made you that way and you can preach longer and more times than I can, well, then you go with what God's made you to do. But stewardship of self is a good thing. Back at college, unfortunately, there were certain faculty members we knew if they were on the platform, they would fall asleep. And, I tried never to make fun of that because I knew why. They were tired, they were serving, et cetera, et cetera. But I did sometimes wonder to myself, because it happened all the time, and I had sleep apnea for a couple years, so I understand what it's like to deal with that. But that was not a good testimony even to the student body, right? Just a little bit better stewardship of self. Listen, that's why I'm doing the diet that I'm doing. I want to be able to serve the Lord to the best of my ability as long as I can be able to do that. We all have our various challenges that we have to face, but stewardship of self, this idea that, man, if I just go out there, I'm not working hard enough, I'm not reaching enough people, listen, we start playing that game in our mind, it'll never end. We have to say, okay, God, you gave me the body that you did, you gave me the life that you have, you gave me the genetic makeup that I have, help me to be wise in how I steward it. And then finally, number six. Oh, I like this. Just a couple words. Jesus wept. That's true. But Jesus also slept. Right? I like that. The shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. Oh, moved with compassion, but yet when he needed rest, what did he do? He took a nap. I saw someone with a shirt that said, be like Jesus, take a nap. As long as that's not all you do, that's okay. That's okay. Sometimes that's what we need. Remember Elijah? As he's running from Jezebel, he was dead tired. When the angel shows up, what does he give him? Harsh instructions? No, gives him something to drink and some angel food cake. Right? That's kind of a stretch, but you understand what I'm saying. Got him some rest. Then number six, I want you to consider this. To be overcome with dread instead of joy actually serves the enemy more than God. So we live in this fallen world, and there's wickedness going on all around us, and it grieves our hearts. And the more we find out about it, and the more we know about it, and the injustices and the immoralities and the hurting of innocent people, etc., it's so easy that weight can start to drag us down, and then there's no joy in our life. And how can I be joyful in the midst of this? How am I supposed to do this? What does Paul say? He says this in Philippians chapter 4. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. Now, he's not talking about North Carolina, whatsoever state I'm in, right? Okay. I know, it's not very funny. That's a dad joke right there, okay? But we tend to think of the negatives, right? I need to be content when I don't have a lot. But Paul doesn't just name negatives, does he? He says, I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I'm instructed both to be full and to be hungry, to abound and to suffer need. And the very next verse is what? I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. I think sometimes it might be just as hard to learn what to do with and how to live through when we are blessed as it is when we're going through a hard time. While we naturally tend to focus on the negative descriptions, clearly he had to learn to handle the good times just as much as the difficult times. Friends, Jesus clearly tells us to be joyful. These things have I spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation. He's not denying that there's horrible things. Tribulation. I mean, that's as bad as it can get. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. After a hard day's work and serious discussion, Theodore Kyler and Charles H. Spurgeon went out in the country together for a holiday. That's what the Brits call vacation, right? Some time off. They roamed the fields in high spirits like boys let loose from school, chatting and laughing and free from care. Dr. Kyler had just told a story at which Pastor Spurgeon laughed uproariously. Then suddenly he turned to Dr. Kyler and exclaimed, "Theodore, let's kneel down and thank God for laughter." And there, on the green carpet of grass, under the trees, two of the world's greatest men knelt and thanked the dear Lord for the bright and joyous gift of laughter. You see, that's what I believe we as Christians need. There is weight. There are burdens. There is tribulation. And we're going to be going through it. And as we look down, if nothing changes and God chooses not to intervene, we see difficulty even coming already to our churches. But at the same time, can we laugh? Can we have joy? That's something I really appreciate about this series, The Chosen, because it infuses that element of joy. I know they have to add things in to fill in the blanks, but I love what they're doing, at least the parts I've seen so far. Children loved to be around Jesus. He wasn't all glum and drum and right? Who wants to be around that? I certainly don't. Author Owen Strachan puts it this way. I don't know if I pronounce his name. I read of him, but I've never heard his name pronounced. Listen to this. I love how he describes this. Then we'll put the handles on it and we'll be done, okay? Listen to how he describes this. The world is on fire, but God reigns. So plant a tree. Start writing a symphony. Begin establishing a lifelong friendship. Join arms with a sound local church. Take your first steps to build a vocation to last all your days. Welcome a child into our world. Eat, rest, laugh. You living for God, living in joy, is a massive way to strike back at the devil who wants to turn out all the lights and drench you in anxiety and despair. Don't let him. I love that. All right, so what can we do? How can we take this home? I call them truth handles. Are you ready? Here they come, rapid fire. Rapid fire, here we go. I also call them actionables. That sounds like a snack for kids or something. Hey, would you kids like some actionables tonight? Yes, we would, with cheese, you know. But hey, you want to call them truth handles? You want to call them actionables with cheese? You can do that. All right, here we go. What do we do about it then, Brother Ben? All right, number one, do allow yourself to be moved with compassion. Don't shut that part of your heart out. Jesus, Matthew 9, verse 36, says, "But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd." So be like Jesus. Be moved with compassion. Don't shut off that part of your heart. It's easy to do that. I don't know what it's like around here. It might be too hot. I don't know. But, well, Pensacola, there's panhandlers all over the place now. And it's easy to shut your heart out, right? Especially when you see these news reports where, you know, 50, 60% of a lot of those people, they don't want to work, and instead they get more money by panhandling. So then it really makes your heart think, oh, is this person even real? Are they really on hard times? I don't know. Don't steal your heart. Allow your heart to be touched. But here's the second thing. So do allow yourself to be moved with compassion. Number two, follow Jesus' instruction on what to do with that compassion. What does Jesus say in the very next verse? Then saith he unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few, right? So go ye into the harvest. Is that the next thing he says? It's actually not. The next thing he says is pray. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. Whose harvest is it? It's his harvest anyway. The very next thing that will help us so much is when we are moved with compassion, when our hearts are burdened and we think we see all this issue, pray. If you think that's a small thing, then you don't understand what prayer is. I put myself in that category sometimes. How about this? Number three, be grateful for whatever blessings God gives you while he gives them. Be grateful for his blessings. I know so many Christians that when God blesses them with something, they're guilty about it. Hey, you know what I'm talking about? Right? I don't have my glasses on. I'm imagining all of you are nodding your heads. But I can't really see you. I can see you. I see men as trees. No, that was from this morning. Okay. God gives you a blessing. Enjoy it. God's given you a pool. Enjoy it without guilt. Right? Unless you got it, you know, through shady means, well, then make it right. But if God gave you a blessing, enjoy it. Listen, I've often thought that we are building a library of joyful memories as a family for each one of our kids. I want them to have that to draw from for the rest of their lives. I think that's important. If they end up undergoing persecution, our son Darren wants to go to closed countries. And the countries that he wants to go to, if he gets caught, I mean, we may never see him again. I mean, that's how serious he is and how serious it is. If he's sitting there in a jail cell, I want him to have a whole library of memories he can go back into to encourage him. By the way, Paul do that? Where was he when he wrote the book on joy, Philippians? Where was he? He was in prison. Verse 3 of the first chapter, I thank my God of what? Every remembrance of you. You know what he was thinking of? He wasn't just thinking, in my opinion, he's not just thinking of the services they had. He's not just thinking of the people won to Christ, although, I mean, that's got to be huge. He's thinking of the fellowships. You know, he's thinking of that time when so-and-so at the end of the table, you know, dropped their drink all over and it went all over so-and-so and they had to clean it up, you know? You follow what I'm saying? You get the feeling. He's remembering those things, and it encouraged him while he was sitting there in a prison cell. So take that vacation. Take the kids to the water park. Go to Sheets, amen. Feeling guilty for something God gives you doesn't mean you're spiritual. It means you're proud. Well, I don't deserve this. We don't deserve anything other than hell. So let's rejoice in the things God gives us. When he gives a blessing, he intends for us to fully enjoy that blessing. Proverbs 10 says, the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. What are we at? Number four? Halfway done. When the plight of persecuted brothers and sisters occupies your mind, live your life as you think they would if your places were reversed. I know that's kind of complicated. Some of you are writing things down. That's a long sentence. I'll say it again. When persecuted brothers and sisters are in your mind, live as they would if your places were reversed. In other words, as I wrote this out this afternoon and finished up this outline, I thought, I wonder if there's any video of the underground church singing, like on YouTube. There weren't very many videos. I could understand why. But I did find a couple. And you know what? I was convicted. Why? It's not guilt. It's different. If our brothers and sisters from closed countries could be here and worship with us, assuming we all knew the same songs, the same words, etc., do you think they'd sing at the top of their hearts? I think so. You know how I know? Because in the videos where they were still the underground church, that's what they were doing anyway. When they got a Bible, they started crying and weeping for joy because many of them had never had a copy of the Bible. You know, that was convicting to me. I've got not just one, but I got a lot of copies of the Bible. We've got it electronically too. Again, it's not about guilt. It's about thinking through it. So tonight, as we sang the songs, I can't sing too loud or I'll blow my voice out and not be able to sing specials for you, okay? But I sang with a different attitude and a different spirit in my heart. Not out of guilt, but out of appreciation. God has given us still the freedom of gathering together and worshiping. Let's not take it for granted. This is a big one. Don't think you care more than God does. Say, whoa, what? Don't think you care more than God does. You see, if we aren't careful, we can accidentally wind up accusing God of injustice without realizing that is what we're doing. If it were up to me, I'd rescue that person. See? If it were up to me, this wouldn't happen. If it were up to me, do you see that type of thing? We got to be careful. Listen, we don't know what God is doing, and I don't understand God, and we'll never understand God, but I do know this, that He loves this world more than I ever could. So let us be careful in our mind when we start lifting ourselves up, saying, well, I wouldn't allow that to happen. I would have stepped in long before now. Listen, God knows what He's doing. The greatest help you can be is to obey God and live for Him wherever He's placed you at this time. And then finally, align every life investment with a strategy to serve God's purposes. So align your life's investment to serve God. You can tell these sermons are fresh, brother, because I still got to tweak some of these statements to make them easier to write down. But in other words, what's a life investment? It's what we spend our time on. What we spend our time on, we need to see, okay, is this something that God can use in the future? Now, that's actually going to be a wider category than you may think. You know why I allow our son Brandon to play Minecraft so much? It's a computer game. Because I'm guessing that there's going to be opportunity for him to put into use in the future principles he's learning as he operates within that world. You know why we've allowed our kids to be involved in certain things, whether it be online or with others? Why do I let him mess around with the camera stuff and camera equipment and do fun stuff and things like that? Why have we chosen to invest in our daughter's Surface tablets through the years so she can draw? She's not drawing. I mean, she helped a missionary with some artwork for a tract. Well, that just shows me right there. Where did she get the skill to be able to be hired for that missionary to do that work? By drawing cartoon characters? Well, that's not a spiritual thing. Wait. God can use that. So it's not this little tiny, teeny, narrow category. But if God convicts you and says, you know, I don't know that you'll ever be able to use this particular thing. Like, it would not be healthy for me to just dive into fantasy football. Right? That just would not be good for me. Okay? Now, maybe some of you, that is your way to relax, and that can be part of a strategy. It would not be a good way for me to relax, like me playing golf. There's nothing about me playing golf that helps me towards the Lord. There isn't. Now, some of you, there probably is, okay? But not me. We just have to think through it. If you focus on being who God wants you to be, don't worry, the battle will come to you. In conclusion, are we fiddling while Rome is burning? Only you can answer that question for yourself. There's no question that Rome is burning, but you're either fiddling or preparing. Vance Havner said, the task of the preacher is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. If you're living your life with no concept of the war going on for the souls of men, women, and children, then you're a comfortable person in need of being awakened. My guess, however, is that most of you here, if not all of you, are already awake, and you, like me and like members of my family, wonder, man, I feel like, well, we should be doing more. Is this right? I mean, should we just drop everything and go, like, out to the streets and winning souls, et cetera, et cetera? Listen, If you're a committed believer wrestling through these things, this message is for you. Yes, it is right to keep putting one foot in front of the other, training our children, teaching line upon line, precept upon precept in our local churches, going down deeper into the Word of God, spending time in wonderful fellowship with each other. These are good things. Working our jobs, getting to know our neighbors, shopping for groceries, all these things are the right thing to do.